2. All right, this tonight, I believe, is the 9th for this series, 8th or 9th. I think it's the 9th. It's January 27th. January 27th. And today we're going to be talking about the Smicha controversy. Smicha controversy. So you think, I don't know, when you see Smicha controversy, you can think of, like, you know, today in a modern day, a number of years ago, every so often it comes up, like, who is a rabbi? You know, like, who has the right to paskin? But this is not that at all. This is something that happened in the 1500s. As a matter of fact, the word smicha, today, we use the word smicha of who is ordained as a rabbi. We use the word smicha. Smicha literally means to lean. And it comes from the original smicha, where Moshe leaned on Yeshua and gave him smicha. Now, today, smicha was known, up until recently, it was known by a different name. It was known by the name of Heta Hora, something like you're a Mora. I don't remember what the name is, but it was a name given that you have a right to paskin. You are a posek. And just recently in history, whatever, it was called smicha again. But after the original smicha. Now, when I say smicha, I just want to let you know there's something called smicha and there's something called the mesora. There's two separate things. Mesora means the tradition that the Torah has passed from Moshe Rabbeinu all the way through today. Now that mesora we have. There's no break in that mesora, that tradition. We know who's Rebbe Talmud, all the way to today. For example, I could go back to the Gra. I can go back to the Vilna Gaon. My Rebbe was Reb Henoch Leibowitz, whose Rebbe was his father, Reb David Leibowitz, whose Rebbe was the Alter of Slabatka, whose Rebbe was the Alter of Kelm, Reb Simcha Zissel, whose Rebbe was Reb Yisrael Salanta, whose Rebbe was Reb Zundel Misalant, whose Rebbe was Reb Chaim Volozhin, whose Rebbe was the Vilna Gaon. So, you know, and most people around here today could make their way back to the Gra. Most people come from the Reb Chaim Volozhin, open up the Volozhin Yeshiva, and from the Gra, it just goes all the way back up. And of course, there are different various branches of Mesora. There was the Mesora from Rabbeinu Gershom, which eventually led for Rashi and the Tosfos and Ashkenaz. That there was that Mesora. You could follow that all the way through. We did deal with it a number of years back, Rashi and the Tosafos. There's the Svard Mesora, and that also comes from the Rif, and the Rif came to Eretz Yisrael, and the Mesora, the Rabbanim, all the way from Spain, and which got transplanted after the Gerush of Spain, after the expulsion, to vary all over the world, mainly in the Ottoman Empire, and here in Spain. So when we're talking about today is something very unique that happened at a certain time. But the Mesora that we have, the Rebbe Talmud, all the way down to our ages, has never been broken, and that's one of the strongest points for Jewish, you know, Yadus. You know, we you know, in terms of the religion, we have you know Rebbe Talmud, or all the way back up to Har Sinai. We have a tradition that God appeared to the national revelation, 600,000 people all at once, and the chain has never been broken. And again, we can go back generation to generation, so that we never lost. There was something that was lost, and that was the original smicha of Moshe Rabbeinu. That was lost, and it was lost because of the Romans. Now that I gave you that little introduction. Now that smicha that was lost, they in Sfat in the 1540s, 1530s, 1538, 39, they tried to bring back that smicha. And this caused a tremendous, tremendous controversy, as we'll see, because certain things you could only do if you were a somech from Moshe Rabbeinu. But now that we don't have that, there are certain things we can't do anymore. Okay, so first, as I just wanted to bring to you just what the Masorah is. This is something, one of the Sfarim of the Rambam. I know we've discussed it in the past as well. But the Rambam, in his introduction to the Mishnayos, you know, he gave a beautiful introduction to what, you know, Mishnayos is, what Gemara is. And he writes over there, he brings down the Masorah. He writes, when Yeshua ben Nun died, he taught the Zakenim. And the laws that they learned out during that time had no disagreement. And those about which, again, he's trying to explain how the Gemara came to have disagreements and questions. We're not really focusing on that. I'm just focusing on the line, the lineage. And if there were any disagreements, they followed the majority of the elders. They took a vote. They say, okay, this is the question, and how do we paskin? Some would say it's permitted, some say it's not permitted, some say tahar, some say tameh. How do you paskin? You follow the majority. So the majority of elders, they would go ahead and they would paskin, and that's it. There were no questions. So during those days, they were able to come up with a... Then the elders gave it over, the Zakenim gave it over to the Nevi'im, and the Nevi'im, the period of the Nevi'im, was really mainly through the times of the kings, the Malachim. The Zakenim was mainly through the times of the Shoftim. So like the first 480 years or so was the Zakenim period. There were prophets then there as well, but they were mainly known as Zakenim. The transition, the one who was the transition person was Shmuel HaNavi. He was the transition from Shoftim, from Zakenim to Nevi'im, through the next 410 years through the times of the kings, which is around during the time, same about the time of the Beis HaMikdash, that was known as the times of the Nevi'im. Okay, and again during this time, first of all, there was always contemplation. That they say there was always havana, there was always learning in Torah and developing Torah and learning more. And the sages, they would make the words of what they got from the previous generation, from their mentors, from their rebbeim, and that was the main thing. And then they would take and learn out from there. And once again, there was no disagreement about any fundamentals that was passed on. You're talking now close to a period of 1,000 years. Then came the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. So again, during the Nevi'im, the last of the Nevi'im is in the Anshei Knesset HaGdola. Yirmiyahu witnessed the Chorban, and we'll go back to him. But then, when the second Commonwealth, or the second Beis HaMikdash came, it started with a body called the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, with Ezra as the head. In the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, you had among the 120 members, you had a number of Nevi'im that we know. There could have been more Nevi'im, but the Nevi'im that we did know about, that wrote for us in the future, were Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Ezra, Nehemiah ben Chalia, Mordechai, Zerubbabel ben Shaltiel, and there was 120 elders. And then from there, the last of the elders, they also took what they learned from before, and they just continued the Masorah. They would learn, and they made decrees. They made, you know, ordinances. They set davening. They decrees. They set when bezin should be in effect, Mondays and Thursdays. They also set up laning days. Some of the laning days, and the last of them was the Shimon HaTzadik. Shimon HaTzadik was the Mishyarei Mianchei Knesset HaGdola. This is really also is the first Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that gets to Shimon HaTzadik. He was the high priest. Again, we know he had an encounter with Alexander the Great. And then he just goes further, just a little. And after them, the time came for Rabbeinu HaKodesh. Rebbe, he's known, we all know him as Rebbe. Rabbeinu HaKodesh, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, was the one Rebbe who was the one that I guess you could say he wrote the Mishnah. He didn't write it, but he was the one that gathered. He had everything. He was head and shoulders among his generation in terms of his lumdus. He's actually, they even say he was like a throwback for even a few generations before him. He had wealth, and he had honor, and he also had a relationship with the Caesar at the time, the emperor, who in the Gemara calls him Antoninus. We know him, he was, as in English, secular, as Marcus Aurelius. So he, at his time, in his period, there was a little bit of a respite. It was a little bit, Klai Yisrael got a breather, because the two emperors before them, Hadrian and Trajan, they were not good to the Jews, and that was the Bar Kokhba rebellion, and there was that was the time of the Asar Eruge Malchus, and that was a very, very harsh time for the Jewish people. And as a result of that, they didn't allow, this is when they didn't allow smicha, but Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi realized, if we don't write it down, it's supposed to be oral. Up until the time of Rebbe, everything was oral. Could you have written a little bit of notes for yourself? You could have, but it was basically everything, the learning had to be oral, and Rebbe came at that time and he said, that's it, we have to start writing things down. If we don't, it's going to be lost. Who knows if we'll be able to get a peaceful time like this, that we could put it all together. He had the means, so he was able to fly in, all the rabbanim from all over the world, and he was able to, with everything that he was able to pull together, get everybody, okay, let's start. Everybody have something of learning. And they'd had these like little, what we today would call Mishnayos or Brisos, and he'd hear a little piece of learning and say, you know what, that's important, that's a Mishnah, that's not important, that's Brisa. Brisa means on the outside. And we went through this many years ago, how the Mishnah all came about, but basically there came about the Mishnah. Rebbe, that was the end of an era when Rebbe passed away. His Talmud Rav may have been the transition, but basically we view him as the first level of Amorayim. And then the next 300 years was the development of the Gemara. 300 years later, around the year 500 of the Common Era, was written by Rav Ashi and Ravina. Then came Rabban and Savroi. Next 500 years was the Gaonim, ending with Rav Hai Gaon. He passed away in the year 1018 or 1016, around that time. That didn't mean that after him, that's it, there was no more learning in Bavel, but that was it. He was the last world class Gaon, and after that, you had yeshivas all over the world starting up. You had Rav Chananel in North Africa. You had Rabbeinu Gershom in Europe, and eventually the Rif, who came from Africa, went to Spain, and now you had Torah all over the world, and the Torah developed till it got to here. That's the Mesorah. So he goes back and he says again, Rav Yehuda Hanasi got it from his father Shimon, who got it from Gamliel, who got it from his father Shimon, who got it from Hillel, who got it from Shmaya V'Avtalion, who got it from Yehuda ben Tabai, Shimon and Shatach. This is really the first parak of Pirkei Avos. We'd say like Yehuda ben Tabai, Shimon ben Shatach, Kiblu Mehem, V'Heimam Mushal Shedvarim, right? What are they known? And before them was Yeshua ben Parachi, Anitar Bailey, Yosef ben Yoezer, and Yosef ben Yochanan, Antigonus Shesoko, Shimon HaTzadik, Ezra, Baruch ben Neria, and Baruch ben Neria's Rebbe was Yirmiyahu HaNavi, and then it goes back from Yirmiyahu, the prophets, Elder Yeshua ben Moshe Rabbeinu. That is the Mesorah. That's Mesorah in terms of our learning, all the way to here, and that's what we have today. So I don't want to make any confusion. In terms of our learning in Mesorah, there's never been a break.
At this time, was all the Nusach, one Nusach, did they have Sephardi, and they had,
great question. They had great question. It seems that in Ashkenaz, their tefillahs were developing in Ashkenaz. At the same time, the tefillahs in Spain, Sfarad, was developing as well. So they may have had the brachos, but were they, you could, like, different words, you get the idea. That's what each brachos had to get across. The first siddur we have was Rav Amram Gaon. And how did it come about? Somebody sent the Shaila to Bavel, to the Gaonate in Bavel. What are we supposed to be davening? Rav Amram's Siddur was the first one. He answered, he wrote a Siddur. Right now, the Siddur had developed a little bit differently in Sfarad and then in Ashkenaz. And then there came, and we're going to, Mitzvah Hashem, we'll talk about it not this week, not next week or the week after. In this time, we have Nusach Ari. So the Reb Yitzchak Luria, who is the Ari, is the one who developed Nusach Ari. And basically, he Kabbalatized Sfarad, more Kabbalistic. And then the Hasidim wanted to Kabbalatize Nusach Ashkenaz, and they came up with Nusach Sfarad. So today, Ashkenazim are Nusach Ashkenaz, and the Hasidim are more Nusach Sfarad. It's crossovers, nothing is, you know, and then you have Sfarad, and you have, but besides Sfarad and Nusach Ari, you also have, you know, we Ashkenazim bunch all of, if you're not Ashkenaz, you're Sfarad, you're a Sfaradi, but that's not true, because Taimanites from Taiman, they were never exiled, and they've been there since the first Beis HaMikdash, and they may have a Nusach of Tefillah that was theirs, along with Moroccans, North African Nusach. They also were not necessarily Sfarad, you know, but Sfaradim came there to settle in the when they were exiled, but they have a Nusach that's different than...
There was a Nusach called Edusim as well.
Right.
Not
sure, but I'm not sure if it's Persia, it's from the, I'm not sure where, it is, right.
From the east.
From the east, I don't know how east it comes from, but.
So a lot of us look at it and say, how could it be that it's so different, this, that, and the other? I think more amazing is how much it's the same.
Exactly. Oh, that's correct. We all have 19 brachas in our 18 brachas in the Shemoneh Esrei, right? We all have 19 brachas. We added, that all added from the Gemara. Right, in reality, look how close that we really all are. And it's not like, you know, we always had traffic between the two. But, you know, it wasn't, you know, each community, you know, really was isolated and grew up, you know, developed on their own. And yet... You know, as different as, let's say, you would go into a Sephardi shul, it's, you know, maybe hard to daven from their sitter or bench from their benching, but you take a look, yeah, we have something like this. It's, you know, all the brachas and the benching, as different as it is, it's all there, and the harachamans, maybe a different order, different words. But you're right, I think it's also how we're the same we really are. Anyway, basically, so now what happened is the Rambam then starts to talk about the smicha. So what happened, he really keeps going in terms of the generation after Rebbe, after the destruction. He says, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and he brings down a list of all these rabbis. Just to mention a few is Rebbe Elazar ben Yaakov, Rebbe Tzaddik, I mean, there's Rebbe Gamliel, his son, Rebbe Chanina ben Dosa. But the one that really is going to be important for us now in the smicha is Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Okay, he was part of, this is the generation that saw the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. Most of these, if not all of these, ended up in Yavne, and they continued in Yavne. That's where now the center of learning took place. The Sanhedrin removed now to Yavne, and that's where everything was. Some of them were, yeah. Some of them would have been the Asar Ruge Malka, Rabbi Elisha, Yishmael ben Elisha, Hakongat. Two of them were earlier than the rest. Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha was one of the two that was earlier, and on this list also, if I'm not mistaken, it's Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So I think Rabbi Shimon, his son, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and Rabbi Yishmael, I think, if I'm not mistaken, these two were part of the Asura Gemalchus, and they were killed earlier. I guess we just call them, they were all killed. Rav Chananya ben Terajan, oh, okay. Yeah, I guess, yeah, he was. Rav Chanina ben Dosi. So I guess, yes, some of these would have been. I guess they lived long. But then came the next generation, and these also, you probably recognize Rabbi Akiva. He was one of those. You're right. So probably this is, you happen to be right. This generation is most of these generation. Many of these are from the Sarahuruge Malchus, right? Okay. But what happened then is, then you had the next generation. This is the generation that was like during and post, because Rabbi Akiva, he was the one that backed Bar Kokhba. He backed Bar Kokhba. Now, after Bar Kokhba, it was really amazing. After the Churban Bayis, so the body of the Chachamim, those in Yavne, did everything they could to patch things up with Rome. And they said, I mean, after the destruction, there was nothing left. Nothing survived except the Chachamim. There were no more priests, or there was no longer chashivas to the priests, the Kohanim. There was no more of these gangs. There was no more the Bar Yonim. There was nothing left. There were no more kings. There was no more anything. The only thing that was left was the Chachamim. And the Chachamim, you know, they went to the Rome and they said, look, we're here for peace. We want to be part of the Roman Empire. We don't want any trouble. And we just want to sit and learn. What do you want? Yeah, give us a yeshiva. Let us sit and learn. Okay. And then what happened is the Romans started becoming a little bit more heavy-handed. So basically, they really patched things up pretty well. And considering, I mean, the Romans suffered losses, you'd think, after such a battle or war with the Jewish people. But, you know, they were able to patch things over. And it's just an amazing that 70 years after this, in the year 130s, so there was a tremendous rebellion from among the Jews to Rome, the likes of which Rome was never as threatened as they were as this army that Bar Kokhba put together. I mentioned this before, just to know how threatened they were. When they came to destroy the Beis HaMikdash, they destroyed it. They came with three legions. I think a legion is about 10,000 soldiers. Three legions and one in reserve. When they came to fight Bar Kokhba, they came with 10 legions and two in reserve. So they you know, and they were just so amazed that the Jews could put together such an army and bounce back 70 years later after having a destruction. You know, like, how is it possible? And after that, they said, okay, no more Mr. Nice Guy. And then they started, that was when the Asaruge Malchus, and publicly, no more public learning, and no more, and this is going to be the time, no more smicha, I'm just about to get to it. They realized that the Romans realized the koach of the Jewish people was the learning. And that's it. They realized, how is it possible, after going through a churban 70 years later, coming up with this? Look at the Jews 70 years later. Right? Just like almost in our day also. You know, Baruch Hashem, look at the Jews 70 years later. Would you ever believe, taking a look at the Jewish people today, that this was a people going like sheep to the slaughter 70 years ago? It's like almost like, could you see why the deniers, Holocaust deniers, are could be believed? I mean, come on, these people, it's not possible, not Shaykh. I mean, any other people, anything else would have been. All right, I digress. But I'm trying to get to the point. The point is what the attitude among the Romans were at that point. Nothing, no more. Now, the generation after them, this was the third generation after Rabbi Akiva. And this was the generation of Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda, Reb Yossi. These are the people you'd find in the Mishnah. Stam Mishnah is Reb Meir. And very often you'll find Reb Yehuda, Reb Yossi in the Mishnah. Reb Nasser, Reb Shimon ben Azai, Chutzpah HaMetorgamin. This is the next grouping. This is what the Rambam brings as the next grouping. Now, this is the generation that did not have smicha. In other words, before these people could develop or be ready for smicha, the Romans said no more smicha. To that point, this is the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. If any of you have done Daf Yomi, you probably just last week we got to it. It's an amazing thing. So here I am. I'm saying, okay, where is this Gemara? And the next thing, the next morning, I say, oh my gosh, this is the Gemara I'm looking for. You know, how's that for Hashgacha Pratis? Anyway, the laws and fines, it says, would have ceased to be implemented. The Gemara says that there would no more have been laws from among the Jewish people, as they would not have been able to do adjudicate cases involving these laws through the lack of ordained judges. This is because the one time the wicked kingdom of Rome issued decrees of religious persecution against the Jewish people with the aim of abolishing the chain of ordination and the authority to the sages. No more smicha. To that end, what did they say? Now they said like this: anyone who ordains judges will be killed. Anyone who is ordained will be killed. The city in which they ordain the judges will be destroyed. And I don't know what this last one is, but the signs identifying the boundaries of the city in which they ordain judges will be uprooted. I guess to such a point, we're not just going to destroy the city. We're just going to, there's not going to be any. I mean, they weren't kidding. This is serious business. So these measures were intended to get into discourage sages from receiving ordination. Now, so the Gemara continues. It says, what did Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava do? He went and sat between two large mountains, between two large cities, and between two Shabbat boundaries. So there wasn't any one city that was too close. So the cities could not be, and he didn't bring anybody with him. There's going to be a discussion. We may yet get to it tonight. How many judges do you need to give smicha? Is it just one? Do you need three? But they're going to bring a proof from here that all you need is one. So between the two cities of Usha and Shepharim, in a desolate place that was not associated with any particular city, so that he would not endanger anyone directly involved, and there he ordained five elders. By the way, if you want to know if in the old cities, this is Shafram and Usha. This happens to be, I don't know, you could, that's so clear, but this is a road leading from Usha, a Roman road. Was it on this road? I don't know, maybe. You see some mountains here and there, but this is, I just typed road from Usha and this came up, so. But yeah, so this is where actually it brings down our story over here. This is wherever I got this from, I don't even remember. Okay, so who were the five people he ordained? Reb Meir, Reb Yehuda, Reb Shimon, Reb Yossi, and Rabbi Elezer ben Shamua. Reb Avia adds that there was a sixth one. Reb Nehemiah was also there. And the incident indicates that, so they want to bring a raya that you could bring one, all you need is one. The enemies discovered it. I guess the Romans had a tremendous, good spy network. And they found out that what was happening, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava said to the newly ordained rabbis, my sons run for your lives. They said to him, my teacher will be with you. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was elderly and unable to run. He said to them, in any case, I'll cast before them like a stone that cannot be overturned. Even if you attempt to assist me, I will not be able to escape due to my frailty. But if you do not escape without me, you will also be killed. People say about the incident, the Roman soldiers did not move from there until they had inserted 300 iron spears. 300 in the Gemara is usually a guzma. But if they lunkiot into him, guzma, making him appear like a sieve pierced with many holes.
Exaggeration.
Huh?
Guzma is exaggeration.
Guzma is exaggeration. It doesn't say it here. But generally when you see the word 300 in the Gemara, and some say even 400, it doesn't mean that they counted 300. It means it was a lot. So they shot him with iron spears. They wouldn't move. He blocked the entrance with his body, and they just couldn't get him out. They kept shooting him with spears, but somehow he was able to hold and block the way for the five to escape. So these five escaped, and it seems that, did they get the smicha? It seems that they did get the smicha. Maybe they didn't. I don't know, but you know, if they didn't, okay, then it was ended here. He didn't get a chance to give it to them. But if he gave it to them, so it does seem that these five couldn't take the chance to give it to others. It just wasn't worth it. I guess you see, you know. So that's it. So you're talking about in the this is probably in the 200s. Well, Rebbe wrote the Mishnayos in the year 200. And this is, Rebbe is the next generation. So Rebbe is the Talmud of Rav Meir. And all these, right. So that's the next generation. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, there's no ordination outside Eretz Yisrael. What's the meaning of there's no ordination? Does it mean they can't function as a Sanhedrin outside? No. Just means we don't ordain judges outside of Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Now, what happened is came fast forward 1,200 years later. And now in Sfat, for the first time, you have, in Eretz Yisrael, you have Rabbanim of note. I mean, like, leading Rabbanim of note since the time of the Amorayim, you know. And even the Amorayim time, they were shadowed by Bavel. So, really, it says when Rav, who was a Talmud of Rebbe, moved to Bavel, then Bavel then became supreme. There was supremacy in Bavel. That's then the shift. The number one place of Torah was Bavel, and because which was under the Persians, okay, and later the Muslims, and those Eretz Yisrael was under the Romans and later the Christians. So as the Romans were never nice to the Jews, and they just made life more difficult and difficult and difficult, and the move was from the Jewish community kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And the Babylonian community kept gaining at the expense of the Eretz Yisrael community. Okay, so it never had that supremacy. It comes 1,500 years, 1,200 years later, and now because of the Geirush of Spain and the conquering of Eretz Yisrael by a very, very hospitable government, the Ottomans. And now, for the first time, there are quite a number of Sfat becomes a real center of learning, and one of the major centers of learning. You still had Poland, and you had what's the name in Greece? What's the name? Salonika. You had Salonika. Thank you. You had Salonika. In Poland. You had and but Sfat was there. It had Gedolim of note, and one of these Gedolim, who is the leader of this, was a person by the name of Yaakov Beirav. So just a little bit about Yaakov Beirav. He was actually from Spain. He was in Castile. Now Castile was on the western side of Spain. Aragon was on the eastern side, and Castile was on the western side. And he came from the province of Toledo, family of Maimongil. He says from the time of the expulsion, he ended up finding himself in Fez. He says when he's 18 years old, he was a rabbi of 5,000 in the province of Fez. I don't think, where to say he didn't have a beard yet, but, he didn't have a beard. And that's it. He didn't have money, whatever. And he was already at 18. He was, and he had plenty of great rabbis there. But he was the leader of them in Fez. This is somebody from the Sefer Omer HaShikha. He says if you ever say that wisdom is lost, you can never say that, since Yaakov Beirav has arisen and come to live in our land among us. And this is a Sefer that talks about Rabbi Yaakov. Yaakov Beirav, comes to Yerushalayim, and this is a letter from Yisrael of Purusha of Yerushalayim, and he writes in his letter, I think this is about probably the 1520s, he says, you should know that regarding the yeshiva of study, you should know that there are two yeshivas. They are ever lost and irretrievable. We used to learn more in one day in depth than we now learn in a month. There is no student of Torah here that descends in the depths of a sugya, especially with Tosfos. There used to be a great scholar who could uproot mountains by the name of Yaakov Beirav, but he left to Egypt, and all the distinguished students left here to save themselves from the famine. I guess in the 1520s it was a famine, and he picked himself up with the entire yeshiva and went to Egypt to learn. No one here could even refer to Pruta. He repeatedly told me to go to his yeshiva in Egypt and promised me great things, but I didn't want to leave Yerushalayim. So that's written from this Rabbi Yisrael of Purusha, of Yerushalayim. This is now Tshuvas Bei Rav, Yaakov Rav, after going to Yerushalayim, Egypt. Somehow he ended up in Damascus. He writes that it was a time he was in Damascus, a terrible fight broke out. Because of that fight, I decided to leave with my children. What happened when I first came to Damascus? We found the community of this had three synagogues. Because of their strife, they decided to make more synagogues, just like the one they actually did make. I saw terrible fighting broke out. I was reluctant to become involved. The outcry was too much. I did what I could. And basically, he wasn't able to do anything. Oh, where'd I go? Okay. And basically, he tried what he could, but he had to leave Damascus and ends up coming to Sfat. And now he's in Sfat. And now he writes in Shuvah. One second. Did I go backwards? Yeah. Okay. So now he says, he is the leader. He was the Rav of the time of the Beis Yosef. In other words, you have to realize who was there at the time. I mean, the Beis Yosef was a Talmud of Rav Yaakov Bei Rav. So that's where we're talking about over here. So he starts in his tshuva of Rav Yaakov Bei Rav in the 63, in his tshuva, he starts bringing down a little bit of the background that we spoke about. It ceased to the sages of the Mishnah, the Roman government decreed that no way anybody who does this will be put to death. This is about 300 years after the destruction of the temple. I guess maybe it probably was a little less than 300 years. It was probably about 200 years, even less than 200 years. It's probably about 150 years after the destruction.
Before the
Rebbe wrote it in the year 200, which is about 130 years after. So this is, we're talking about maybe about 100 years after. It's okay, so I see what it writes. I don't know if it was translated wrong or he just wrote approximately. Now it's my intention to clarify the issues and if it would be possible to come to such a restoration. He says, even though Hillel and the Bezin fixed the new moons and holiday, he says there's still, and we're not going to, basically that we're not going to touch. Again, we have one of the main things of a Sanhedrin, which in order to have a Sanhedrin, they all have to have smicha, was one of the things that a Sanhedrin did is that they were able to do the new moon through Adam. As opposed to, but when Hillel, this is in the 400s, realized, he saw the writing on the wall that when the Christians took over in Rome, they took over Rome, Rome became a Christian country. Christians look at Judaism as the competition, the old fangled, we're the new and better and improved. And it doesn't look good if, the Sanhedrin is determining when their Christian holidays are, because he needed the new moon, whatever. So the Sanhedrin wasn't good for the Christians. So they abolished it, basically. But before they abolished it, Hillel, who was the Nasi at the time, made a calendar. So if you want to start messing with the calendar, whatever, you need a Sanhedrin and you need Mesmachim, even though Hillel didn't have Smicha, but... So, but I guess he says, look, we're not going to touch the calendar. That's what Yaakov Bei Rav says. However, there are other things we could take care of. Money issues of theft, assault and battery, makos, other things that the Bezin can do. Bezin, well, we have a Bezin, it's three Rabbanim together, it's called a Bezin, a court of law. Well, I guess here we're talking about more than that. We're talking about the Sanhedrin.
Go back to that list of the monetary issues.
Right, so monetary issues, that you don't, the Bezin of three. You don't need more than that. That's it. You can, any three Rabbanim.
You don't need Smicha.
You don't need Smicha for money. Theft also. Assault and battery also. I'm not sure about Makos. A certain type of Makos to Rabbanim, maybe you could do with three. He says, in the Gemara was taught, Smicha Zakenim require three judges. What do you mean, three? So this is where they bring back the our Gemara. What do you mean you need three? Over there, he was able to do it with just one. Rabbi Yehuda ben Baba did it with just one. So that's his question. What I do? Did I do too many? Right. So his question is well, if you need three, or do you need one? But in any case, how do you restart it? We don't have somebody who has smicha. Basically, the way smicha was given is you had somebody who had smicha, and he was able to give smicha to somebody else. And that's how it perpetuated for year after up until this time.
I still don't understand. If monetary and theft and all that, maybe possibly not makos, so what is unique about smicha that he wanted to receive?
Great question. So I guess I was going to deal with this later, but if this is the time. This is the time. We're talking in 1520. The Gaelish Spain happened in 1492, and 1497 was from Portugal. There were many Jews, tens of thousands, in Portugal, maybe as many as 100,000, maybe more, that were forced to become Christians against their will. Maybe some thought that it would be, Passover, whatever. But now, this is again 1530, in the past 30 years, there were Jews that were slipping out of Spain and slipping out of Portugal, coming and joining the Jewish people. Now, Christianity, to worship Christianity for a Jew, is considered avodah zarah. I think the Rambam paskins like. Islam is not, but Christianity is. Why? Because Christianity has like three parts: the Father, the Son, and whatever. So, for a Jew to have that shittuf, that's like a partnership of Hashem. That's b'chlal l'hoving doesn't make sense. But let's assume that whatever they believe in. For a guy, there's no issue. There's no problem of shittuf, of having partnerships. Like if they believe in a God, okay, God has three parts. For a non-Jew, it may not be. It's not called idol worship. For a Jew, it is idol worship. So you may now have thousands, if not tens of thousands of Jews that have been slipping out of Spain and Portugal and joining the Jewish people, that are, if they had been worshiping idols, then they are chayiv karis. Now, in order for a person to be saved from the punishment of karis, if they get makos, that makos could save them from karis. So one of his motivations was, if we can get smicha back and we can give them the proper makos, we can save all of these Jews from getting karis. That was one of his motivations. Another one of his motivations, as we'll say, if we get to it at the end, was the idea that it'll hasten the coming of Mashiach. Because he's going to bring a pasuk in Yeshaya, which I'll say now. But pasuk in Yeshaya says, "Voshiva shoftenu, shiftech voshiva." We have the pasuk in Shmoneh Esrei. We dive into Hashem, "Voshiva shoftenu kavirishona." Bring our judges back like before. And it comes from the first parak in Yeshaya that seemed to say that before Mashiach comes, Hashem is going to return judges. So how do you return judges if there is no more smicha? So he's going to try to get how to bring back smicha. Okay? And that's what Yaakov Beirav is going to try to do. He's going to want to do it. Now how he's going to do it if nobody has smicha? So basically at this point, I mean, I have it on the over there, but basically he wants to get it from a Rambam. And there's a Rambam here in Hilchas Sanhedrin, Perek Dalid, Halacha Yud Aleph. And the Rambam says as follows. The first part is something else, but it may be important for the last part. It says, Harei shelo haya b'Eretz Yisrael, ela somech echad. If in Eretz Yisrael there was only one person with smicha, Moshev Shnayim Betzido. So we had that question. On the one hand, it says you need three, and you see by Yehuda ben Bava you need one. But he says, but basically, what this one person who has smicha, he does, he gets two rabbis with him. So he can get two rabbis, and these two rabbis, so then, once he has like his own bezdin, even though he's the only somech, he could start to appoint, it says, after he has those, V'somech shivim ke'achad. He could be somech 70 people at the same time. O ze'achazel, one after another. V'yachukach yasehu v'hashivim. Then he and the 70 of the Bezdin Gadol, v'yismachu Bezdin Acherim. And that's it. Once you get yourself a Sanhedrin of 71, and they're now all musmachim because they got smicha from this one person, and now they are, you have a bezin of smicha, and they can go ahead and they could bring smicha, give smicha to other people as well. Nirinli hadvarim. Now the Rambam says nirinli is his own. She'im heskimu kol hachachamim shebe'eretz Yisrael. If all the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael, and that's important. Limnos dayanim, want to appoint dayanim. V'lismalchosam, hari elu smuchim, they could be somech them. V'yeshlehem ledin, and then they could have dine knasos. V'yeshlehem lismach acherim, and they fines. Knas is a fine. That's something that we don't do today. We don't like give fines. That you need smicha for. So we could start to give fines. V'yeshlehem lismach acherim. So im kain, this is the Rambam talking. Why were they so upset about not having smicha? Right, the Gemara that I just brought with Rabbi Yehuda ben Baba, that the Knasas were going to be lost, and Yehuda ben Baba did this. So what's the big deal? You know, the Rambam is saying, why doesn't the rabbis all get together and then give smicha? So it says, Lafisha Yisrael Mefuzarin. So the Rambam himself answers. He says, because all the Jews are scattered. V'yafshashi yeskimu kulam, and you can't get them all together. V'yim hayu sham soymech mipi samuch, eno tzaruch das kulam. But if you had one person who had smicha, then he doesn't need everybody else. He can continue the line himself. Eladin kenasos l'chol shaharei nismach mipi bezdin. And they can continue it. And then at the end, he says three words. And it's going to be very controversial what these three words are. Adavar tzarech hechra. And the matter needs hechra, to look into it more. You need to look into it more. So basically, from this Rambam, he wants to say, just the short of it, is the Yaakov Bei Rav wanted to take from this Rambam that he had the ability to go ahead and redo smicha. Because in Sfat at the time, with maybe the exception of, we're going to see his one antagonist, the one, the rabbi of Yerushalayim, the Ralbach, who we spoke about last week also, a little bit, he is going to be against the Rav Yaakov Bei Rav. He's going to, you know, but all the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael are in Sfat, and he believes that he can do it. He says the Ravid, now my Rashiva, I remember him saying this, but everybody says this, the Ravid lived at the time of the Rambam. And the Rambam came out with the Mishnah Torah. The Ravid, whenever he argued, he wrote. So whenever you see a Rambam and the Ravid doesn't argue, you could assume you have two Rishonim. Because if the Ravid would have argued, he would have put it in. So he says, not only do I have the Rambam, but the Ravid doesn't argue, and I have the Ravid too. And it seems that if all the why didn't the rabbis up until now do this? Because they couldn't get everybody together. And he had them all together. He says, what do you do about the end? It says the matter needs discussion. So the Rav Yaakov Bei Rav, he says, it's not going on this. It's going on the matter before, when you have one somech and two rabbis on the side. So he says like this, what happens if he wants to give smicha to one person, and the two rabbis on the side, they don't have smicha, but he needs them all three together, the two rabbis on the side disagree, and they say he doesn't deserve smicha. Could the rabbi who's the musmach give smicha anyway? In other words, does he need all three to agree? Or no, he is the one, and they're just like the Bezdin. They're just like, you know, giving it the chashivas of a Bezdin.
Shouldn't the Bezdin agree? And the Bezdin should agree.
Well, so Rav Yaakov Bei Rav is saying that's what the Rambam means, that the matter needs hechrach. We got to look into it more. I'm not sure if he's the only one that does it, all three need to agree. That's what the Rambam seems to say. And the Marbach And basically, based on this, he wanted to go ahead and he wanted to start the smicha over.
That's the point when there were rabbis in Israel who could all agree on anything.
Which is an amazing thing. He had 25. Oh, right. But there were 25 major rabbis that signed on this. Right. Okay. But in any case, so he writes, again, the Jews were scattered. This is the Rambam. Okay. So these are different questions that he has. And basically, he says that here we have a very unique opportunity. He says, first of all, right, he brings this pasuk in Yeshaya. It seems that from the pesukim, smicha has to be before Mashiach comes. And Mashiach was in the air in those days. Because with the craziness with the world turning topsy-turvy and everything was turning over, and you know, the Ottoman Empire is expanding and Jews are expelled from Spain and everything is turning. So they fit. This was like a time when they thought Mashiach was coming. It was the time. And then I mentioned the flogging with giving makos. You'll have that. You know, we'll be able to do that. Rambam and Ravid agree. And okay, so that was his point: is that here we are all in Spain, and therefore we have this unique ability that in Eretz Yisrael we got all the rabbis together, and if we all agree, we can get the smicha going. And he explained this the matter needs resolution is going on the piece before. Comes the Marlbach, he's the Rav of Yerushalayim, and he says absolutely not. He says first of all, he says the Rambam when he says Vadavat Sarach Hechra is not going on the piece before, it's going on this piece. It's going on the fact that could you give smicha if all the rabbis agree. And that's why the Ravid doesn't argue, because the Rambam himself is not sure of it. No, that's how, you know, the Marlbach is arguing on Rav Yaakov Bei Rav on these points. He says, what do you do about Yeshaya? I'm speaking it out more because of time. What do you do about Yeshaya that says that the judges will come before Mashiach comes? He says, the judges, first of all, he says, who knows what's going to happen? He says, the judges coming before Mashiach. He says, you know, maybe it could be that if Eliyahu HaNavi has to come, maybe that meant those judges will happen later. You don't know what's going to happen. But if Eliyahu HaNavi comes before Mashiach, Eliyahu HaNavi is a musmach. Eliyahu HaNavi, he had smicha. He can give smicha to everybody. So we don't need, you know, how is it going to happen? Maybe it can happen through Eliyahu HaNavi. I mean, that was some of his things. He also says, he also goes into the flogging. He says the makos may not help. He says the real makos that we're talking about has to be done. There has to be warning, and there has to be witnesses. And he says he's not even sure if a person voluntarily, let's say these Girushim from Spain, they would go to the Bezdin, there was somebody who had smicha, and they'd say, look, give us makos, because we want to save ourselves from Karis. He's not even sure that would help for that. In other words, it wasn't going to be necessarily that it could work if it was voluntary, if it's a voluntary and it wasn't without witnesses and an edim. So here he says about Eliyahu HaNavi. He says also you can't just say. He says there's another part that I didn't get into, which is the Rambam says all the rabbis have to agree, and he didn't agree. He also says that you can't follow just the majority if I wasn't involved in the back and forth. In other words, the Marlbach says like this: look, if I was there, and I presented my side as negative, and you presented positive, and then we all took a vote. So instead of 25 rabbis there were 26 rabbis, and 25 said, "Let's go for it," and I said, "No, I understand. Okay, there's a majority, and you have to follow the majority." But I wasn't there, and therefore nobody heard my dissenting side. Maybe after I would have given over my side, most of the rabbis, they would agree with me. So you can't say you follow the majority. That's only if everybody was heard. That was another point that the Marlbach says. He says also, what do you want? Do you want to become mismachim? Do you know what a Sanhedrin needs to do? Do you know that they need 70 languages? Do you know what they have to be able to branches? Okay, so he says you're not going to be doing capital punishment, so you don't have to know all the ins and outs of sorcery and witchcraft and everything, because you're not going to be killing people. But still, there's so much that you have to do in the Rabbanim on the levels that they had. Who can say today, as great as we all are, who could say that we even come to the, you know, anywhere close to what needs to be for a Sanhedrin? So he really put it, he says, in my humble opinion, we don't have the ability to present implementing the ruling. And basically, what ended up happening is they all agreed that there would be smicha, and they gave smicha to Rav Yaakov Bei Rav. And what happened is somebody ratted on Rav Yaakov Bei Rav to the Ottoman Empire, and they said he's starting judges, he's rebelling. So Rav Yaakov Bei Rav had to run for his life. But before he ran for his life, for the people there, they gave smicha to Rav Yaakov Bei Rav and the Ralbach, the Rav of Yerushalayim. So they say, look, you gave me smicha number two, so you can't say I'm not a rabbi because you gave me smicha. And I totally disagree. So you can't say, well, the rabbis agree to this. You know, but he ends up saying that, he ends up, okay, I spoke all this out. He ends up saying this, that, look, I think I saw from his writings, from his tshuva, his whole point is bringing the Mashiach, and look, if that's his, you know, of course we want Mashiach to come, and but it's not, this is not the right way, the right thing to do. Also says if it affects all the rabbis, you're going to start doing kenosos and certain things, it's going to affect all the Jews all over the world, they really have to be involved as well. And no, nobody agreed with this, outside of Sfat. He encountered, you know, in Europe, they also disagreed, and in Egypt, the Rav of Egypt disagreed. He says, if you do this again, please, I'd love to come, I'll discuss it with you. You want to have another, if you want to have another discussion about this, count me in. And what happened is the tshuvas of Yaakov Bei Rav, it says that we're not going to redo the months, and they all agreed and they conferred smicha on Rav Yaakov Bei Rav. Rav Yaakov Bei Rav gave four scholars, one of them the Rav Yerushalayim. He gave the Beis Yosef, is the second, and the last one, I'm not sure who it was. So that would have been four, but it then went. I got the history of it. Okay. Oh, so just the Ma'ariv al Rach. I know we did this last week. Just before I got the history, how far did this go? The Ma'albach said. He says about his lifetime, his achievements, that there were two things that he felt that he achieved. Greatness. It was his great things that he achieved. One was, and we mentioned last time, there were some charlatans coming in claiming that they were Mashiach. And they I guess they said, it sounded like just from what he said, that two important matters, is they gave some false prophecies and the people were ready to attack the non-Jews there, and the Malbach calmed them down and said, don't do it, and he was able to stop them. He says, hey, if they would have just gone on with what they would have done, they would have been all killed, all wiped out. And the second one is, he says, preventing the restoration of the smicha. He saw that as his life achievement, that one of his greatest goals. What happened is he conferred smicha through four rabbis. One of them was Rabbi Yosef Cairo. Rav Yosef Cairo gave it to Rav Moshe Alshech, Elisha Galico, and Yaakov Bei Rav, his grandson, the grandson of Rav Yaakov Bei Rav. The Alshech gave it to Chaim Bital, and Yaakov Bei Rav gave it to the following scholars, Moshe Galanti, Eliezer Azkiri, Moshe Bei Rav, Yaakov Bei Rav's brother, Avraham Gabriel, Yomtov Sahalon, Yichya Rofi, and Yaakov Abu Lafia. These ended up getting it between 1594 and 1599. I mean, this is like, this is the end. But these seven all agreed not to give it to anybody else. So it ended up dying with those seven. So it did not continue at all, and the controversy, that was it with the controversy. It never made it anymore. David ibn Abi Zimra was the Rav of Egypt at the time, and he also agreed with the Maubach that it should not be, that it was wrong, there was no justification, it was not able to reestablish the smicha. And that's it, that's the smicha. So, interesting for a time. Next week, Emes Hashem, I hope to speak about Rabbi Yosef Cairo and his writings, and he was, till today, this is, you know, the basis of all of Halacha. The Mishnah Brura, it comes from the Mechaber, the Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Cairo, and the Ramah. Everything today, this is all, the basis of all Halacha is from the next person. So, Emes Hashem, we have Yosef Cairo, Emes Hashem will be the next week, I think. I don't think we need two, but yeah.
When did smicha? When did the institution of smicha get started again, according to the way we know it today?
No, we always had a smicha. We just never I think only recently have we been calling it smicha. You know, just like the name as people understand it, like what the smicha was. But we always had a heter rabbanim, like a mora, you know, being taught, giving the right to paskin, to be a rav, to the next generation from Rebbe to Talmud. We never lost that. That was always, you know, that's why I was saying in the very beginning. That's our mesorah, that's our tradition. We shouldn't think that, you know, at some point in our history we didn't learn and we didn't have anything and we forgot it. Now, our learning has been Rebbe Talmud all the way to Moshe Rabbeinu. The only thing that we are missing is that smicha component, being the smicha, being somich, getting that special the smicha of Moshe Rabbeinu. That was lost. And that was lost in the...
But at some point they put it in writing. Didn't every rabbi get a piece of paper?
Yeah, but that's today. You have a writing that you have permission to... Paskin halachas. That's what that is today. That's all it is. A heter hora. You have a heter to that. You know the halachas. You learned it well. You were tested by this rav. Whatever the material is that you have to know. All right. Okay. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.